This audio comes from the collections of the Lesbian and Gay Archives of New Zealand. For more information, visit lagans.org.nz.
The Sexual Law Reform Bill. I have been aware of the very considerable number and the close similarity of a great number of the amendments that are in the, before the committee, so that I have asked the clerk, in association with the law draftsman, to prepare a schedule of these in such an order as would allow a rational consideration of the issues involved in each one, if they are carried out in this order, to be made available to members of the committee. The House may not instruct the committee in this way, but I have asked the clerk to have this prepared and distributed to members of the committee so that each member of the committee will be aware that all the other members have this information in front of them. I declare the House in committee on the Homosexual Law Reform Bill.
Mr. McClay is still about
order. The House in Committee on the Homosexual Law Reform Bill. The question is that Part 1 stand pat. When this matter was last being discussed, Mr. Roger McClay was speaking. He has 4.5 minutes.
Mr. Chairman, in the half minute that I had to say a few things concerning these measures, I did say to the committee that, and to the member of the bill, that I believe that her habit of resorting to what I see as some personal abuse of members who happen to be opposed to her own point of view did nothing to enhance her chances of this bill moving through the committee stages smoothly. Mr. Chairman, I reminded the committee that there were, after all, 830,000 people who took the trouble to put their signature to a piece of paper to say that they did not want a bar of the contents of this particular bill. Now, Mr. Speaker, there's been a lot of conjecture about how many of those signatures should have been permissible. I don't care whether the number is half, Mr. Speaker. It is still, Mr. Chairman, a very significant number of people who feel that they have not been given the hearing or the consideration that they should have been given. As far as I'm concerned, this measure has become a government measure, because when you look at the way irrational government members measure, and Mr. Speaker, I believe that it's symptomatic of how the government members in this House have refused to listen to the vast majority of New Zealanders on all sorts of issues, and this just is just another one. 830,000 people, Mr. Speaker, they should be listened to. These are people who ask why it is that New Zealand must be the country to have the most liberal homosexual laws in the world. Why is it that New Zealand has to have the most liberal laws in the world? I can accept well-meant argument for some changes, but I cannot accept that New Zealand in this day and age is a country that is prepared or wants the most liberal laws in the Western world. I want to say to the mover of the bill that no law change in New Zealand at this time is going to bring about a change of attitudes concerning these problems. It's a change of attitudes that is needed. And no law changes at this particular time, be it to the age of 16, 18, 20 or 90, is going to change the attitude of those 830,000 people and the people they represent. The member won't get rid of the attitudes that she doesn't like in other people. I want to address some remarks and questions to the member and ask why it is that we look at amendments concerning 16, 18 and 20. Why is it that we look at those particular ages? What is so magic about those ages? What is wrong with 17 or 19? I also want to say to the member who's moved this bill
that there is much confusion and alarm and concern about the age of 12, and I refer to the bill. Part 1, Section 3, concerning the two new sections, 140, indecency with a boy under 12, 140A, indecency with a boy between 12 and 16. I want to know what the implications are if this committee should decide that it will allow these homosexual acts between people at the age of 20. Will that make any difference to the ages as mentioned in these new sections? Under 12, indecency between boys 12 and 16. And does it mean, Mr. Chairman, in this regard, in 140A2, where it says it is a defence to a charge under this section if the person charged proves that the boy consented and that he is younger than the boy. Does this mean it will be quite legal if the boy is a 13-year-old and has performed these particular pursuits with a boy older and can prove it? I want to ask the member in the chair if she can address her remarks to that, because many people are most concerned about that. Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Braybrook.
Mr. Chairman, I rise to take part in this debate in the committee stages, possibly for the first time, having been overseas. I was somewhat surprised when the member who has just resumed his seat said that this was a Labour Party bill. I wonder if he's spoken to his own political colleagues at Waipar, North Shore, Raglan, etc. Mr. Speaker, this is not a government's bill, this is Parliament's bill. And the member for Wellington Central, quite rightly acting within her rights as a member of Parliament, has introduced this bill for Parliament to discuss and to either pass or reject. It has nothing to do with party politics, and it's a pity that that member who has just resumed his seat even here has tried to play party politics. It may be on his side of the House, but on this side of the House we have complete freedom of conscience to vote as we will, and I jealously guard that right. Mr. Chairman, I am against this bill, as I think is well known. I want to speak briefly, if I may, to those effects, Part 5, and I wish to rise to support the SOP put forward by my colleague, the Minister of Defence. I 100% support that, and I do it for the following reasons. Discipline in the armed forces is a fragile thing, but it is an absolute essential commodity to have. No armed force can carry out its job without discipline. And it has been shown that where husband and wives are serving in the armed forces, rarely are they allowed to serve in the same unit. It is because of the emotional attachments which naturally a husband and wife have for one another. If we permitted this bill not to be extended to the armed forces, then you would find that gay people, who would obviously have a great deal of emotional affection for one another, could be that discipline where an order had to be given instantly and instantly obeyed, that would be in jeopardy. Therefore, I think the Minister of Defence's amendment should be agreed to. Another thing why the armed forces must not allow anal intercourse, Mr. Chairman, is because in a battlefield situation, each and every soldier is virtually a walking blood bank. And the Falkland Islands has shown us that. It would be disastrous for a soldier to be wounded and need a blood transfusion suddenly to find that he could be contaminated with the disease of AIDS. And I do not say that lightly. It is a blood-borne disease. There is not the time in a battlefield condition to test each and every blood sample for AIDS. It would be impractical and impossible in a battle situation. And can you imagine the morale of our armed forces if a soldier who was wounded, even slightly, but needed a blood transfusion, was to contact AIDS in that way? Until such time as AIDS can be screened and is eliminated by medical science, then it must not be in any way endanger our armed forces. Mr. Speaker, another reason why I believe that it should not be entertained by the armed forces, I think, is because it would bring about a huge embarrassment and insult to our serving soldiers, sailors and airmen. I served many, many years in the armed forces. Gay people, rightly or wrongly, and I can understand activists in the gay movement failing to understand that, But gay people in the armed forces are universally detested. And I can tell you now that to make it suddenly legal for men to sleep with one another would cause grave acts of indiscipline. And I can tell you many a story could be told on what has happened to people who have tried to carry out gay practices in the armed forces. It is intolerable and it is unacceptable. Mr. Chairman, I have spoken to many of my former colleagues in the armed forces. They find the thought that if the civilian law is changed, it will also apply to those subject to military law utterly detestable. As one said to me, Mr. Chairman, kiss me goodnight, Sergeant Major, could well become a reality. That would make a mockery of the discipline of the armed forces, and it is totally and utterly unacceptable. Mr. Speaker, there have been some gay people who have forwarded all sorts of pamphlets for some people who apparently in the past, non-living of course, who have apparently been well known in military circles who have been gay. And I note before, however, that they're all dead now. But let me say to you that for every person that you can produce like that, I can produce at least 1,000 who were not gay. There is no room in the armed forces for people who are not gay.
Mr. Morris McTeague.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise to speak in the committee stages in opposition to a number of the clauses in Part 1. But I'd like to start off, Mr. Chairman, by saying that I believe that for all of those parliamentarians who are in this Parliament and who accept part in this conscience vote issue, that it is a time to be counted. It's a time to be counted because we're making a decision here, and we have to make the decision in the light of what's God's law and what's man's law. And if there is no place in this Parliament for God's law, then why do we pray daily? And why do, whenever we petition this Parliament, do we make that in the form of a prayer? Because I believe that there is a real responsibility for this Parliament to exercise its influence in setting a standard and a leadership for the moral code of the society as well. And I believe quite strongly, Mr. Chairman, that there is no way that the act of sodomy on somebody between the age of 12 years and 16 years, even though it be penalised by the court, can be accepted or encouraged or even allowed to happen and have the condonement of this Parliament. It is just as unacceptable to me, if that particular practice is to be advocated beyond the age of 16 years. And there is no upper limit as far as I am concerned. It is a matter of making a decision, according to my value judgments, on whether it is right or wrong. If I'm going to make a judgment on whether it's right or wrong, I have to go back to the history that developed my standards and my values. And in developing those values and standards, I have to be thankful that the people who developed my character were not gay people. Because I believe that my values and standards would be very substantially different if they had been developed by people who were gay. The fact that this Parliament may, and I pray won't, but the fact that this Parliament may sanction this particular bill will, I believe, change for all time the course of our society. And it's a change from which it will be very difficult to pull back, if not impossible. It will have a damaging effect, particularly on heterosexual relationships in our community and on the family unit as a whole. I'm asked how. I believe that the family unit as a whole only functions adequately because there is the special relationship that there is between husband and wife, and that special relationship has been developed but with the encouragement of the faith of our great religions to be able to bring up the children in a protected and loving environment which will produce for them the values that they will require and need to be able to fulfil the role that they play in the progeneration of the next generation.
That's why incest is illegal, Captain.
Mr. Chairman, Clause 4 deals with indecent assault on a man or a boy. And that indecent assault is unacceptable to me at any time, in any place, or under any conditions. And I would just like to say to this House that in many instances I know young people of the age of 16 years who I still consider to be boys, and who at an even later age, 17, 18 and 19 years of age, are still boys. I believe that we have in our society developed a system which has very much developed the intellectual capabilities of our young people, but we have to recognise that a growing up process is not a matter of growing up and developing all of the talents at the same time. And at the age of 16 years, I believe that we have very substantially underdeveloped emotional talent and emotional values. And the fact that at that age we could be subjected to this kind of sexual provocation and maybe in some situations sexual harassment will have, in my opinion, a long-lasting detrimental effect on those individuals concerned. It is totally unacceptable, and I believe that the responsibility lies with us to recognise that as a thinking people here inside a thinking parliament. I would urge the members of this House that their first consideration has to be not what the mores of society may be saying to them at the moment, not what the liberal element within our society may be saying to us, that it is time for a change, that there is a need for some liberalisation.
Mr. Roger McKay,
it's easy to see why the people of Timaru chose that member to represent their views. And it's the same reason that he will be here as a Member of Parliament for Timaru for as long as he chooses. Because he's representing the views of the vast majority of not only his electorate, but of New Zealand. Now I think it's time that this Parliament stopped and listened and looked at where we are going on issues of this nature. It is not the way New Zealanders want our nation to go. New Zealanders want to hear parliamentarians expressing their concern about the other issues of the day that this government is causing.
Sorry to interrupt the Honourable Member, but the time's arrived for me to leave the chair and I shall resume the chair at 7:30.
In fact, pose some questions to the Minister of Defence who has an amendment concerning this part of the bill. But I want to pose a question to all members of this committee when considering these measures. Part of the most liberal homosexual measures in the world. Why is it New Zealand, of all countries, has to accept those most liberal homosexual laws in this day and age? I'm not sure that New Zealand is the country that should be accepting that on its shoulders. I want to know why it is that if we look at the reasoning of the Minister of Defence, based on the Chiefs of Staff who made a detailed examination of the basis for their services attitudes to practicing homosexuals serving in the forces, the Minister told us, they came to the conclusion that this would adversely affect the coherence, the discipline, the command, and ultimately the operational capacity of the armed forces. What's wrong with that reasoning for the whole nation? Why is it that just the armed forces need to adhere to these considerations? I want to ask the member interjecting, who always interjects very loudly just after tea break every evening. Strange that. He should concentrate on the food more. I want to ask the member, what about these criterion pertaining to other groups? What about teachers? What about the discipline and command and the moral fibre as pertaining to schools and teachers? What about lawyers and their dealings with people? What about those who are involved with youth groups, the scoutmasters and so on? And what about parliamentarians? Why is it that the armed forces is such a special case? Now, I can accept the submissions of the Minister of Defence on behalf of his own amendments, but I do ask other members of the committee, why is it that that one special group applies? I hope that the committee will address itself to that, because the Minister did talk about the need in the armed forces of effectiveness, discipline, the health questions, as if it applies to the Army, Navy and Air Force only. What about the health questions that apply to the whole nation and the whole community, particularly our young people between 12 and 16, for goodness sake? Where are we leading this nation? We are parliamentarians. This is a free vote. Why don't we listen to 830,000 people who have told us, on behalf of many other people as well, this is not the measure that New Zealand wants? And I believe that parliamentarians have got an opportunity to show a bit of moral fibre. This is not the way New Zealanders want to take this nation. And I hope that the member in the chair will address the specific questions I have asked of her, particularly pertaining to her proposed law changes pertaining to 12 to 16 year olds, what the implications are if in fact the amendments allowing homosexual activities between 20 year olds are in terms of the ages that she has in her bill. Will the 20 year age group make any significant need for changes to 12 to 16? Should it be 16 to 18 in that case, for example? I would like to know the significance of the ages of 16, 18 or 20. Why have those ages been chosen? As my colleague, the member for Timaru, ably demonstrated earlier in the debate this afternoon, these matters pertain to attitudes. These matters pertain to the moral fibre of people of this nation. The attitudes of this nation are not going to change. I want to hear from the member in the chair to those specific requests which I make on behalf of many people who have written to me, and I know other members who are most concerned. And I hope that she'll give us those answers. Mr.
Jim Anderton.
Mr. Chairman, I think the truth of the matter is that people are not made either good or bad by laws or by acts of Parliament, but by the ethics that they acquire from their own moral formation, which is gained on a personal basis and not through legislation. This homosexual law reform bill is intended to foster equality before the law for all New Zealanders, regardless of, in this case, their sexual orientation. But of course it could be, in other instances, in other legislations, their religion or their political belief or anything else. And approving this legislation, Mr. Chairman, to bring about equality or equal treatment in a legal sense does not necessarily imply support or otherwise for the behaviour of individual people. And it is my belief that you cannot legislate for goodness, and that all we can do as political representatives is ensure that there is a legal framework within which the common good is protected, as well as providing for individual rights to be exercised. Now, I want to say to the members who have spoken in this debate previously today that the time for equality before the law, in my view, is now. Other nations have taken this step years ago. And I've heard mention made by members during this debate about Christian values and homosexuality. But nowhere in Christian teaching can I find any suggestion that one's Christian values should be determined by public pressure, by referenda, or by the weight of numbers on a petition. I want to remind members of the House that Pontius Pilate held a referendum. He held a referendum. He knew his prisoner to be innocent. But he believed that as the recognised lawmaker of his time and place, that he could wash his hands of the decision of the mob and stand aside and allow those with the weight of numbers on their side to have their say. And I would remind members who want to quote Christianity in their defence of that fact. The House, this House and the members of it cannot, in my view, wash their hands in that way. They must decide for themselves. And it is my view that the possibility of objective, well-informed and unemotional consideration of this matter has been shown to be well-nigh impossible. My mail, and I suggest the mail of all members, is evidence of that fact, and some of the contributions to this debate reinforce that point. I want to refer, Mr. Chairman, particularly to clauses 4 and 5. It has barely been noted that the terms of imprisonment for indecent assault or anal intercourse on a boy under the age of 16 years is the subject to imprisonment of between 7 and 14 years. Now, Mr. Chairman, that is the same range of sentence usually reserved for murder. And I want to know what punishment do those who oppose this bill want? Do they want more punishment than for the crime of murder? And if they do, what are the implications of that? Does it in fact then suggest that you might as well kill a victim as well as perform any other indecency on that victim? Because those who want more punishment than for the crime of murder are inviting that comparison. And I want to say in answer to the member for Invercargill who spoke earlier in this debate that it seems to me that the police have got a lot better things to do with their time than deal just with homosexuals and chase them around the place. Dealing with heterosexual rape offenders, for one, would be an important job of the police, and I suggest that we give them plenty of opportunity to do that work. We like to remind the Honourable Member for Invercargill of the words of that London bobby who wrote to me again, because I want to ask this question of that member. Will it be you for the member for Whangarei, or a religious group, or a vigilante squad, or the police who seek out these homosexuals that you want to persecute? Before the English law changed, he said to me, I was a young policeman ordered into the dark streets and the private recesses of London to hunt and arrest homosexuals. My actions were the immoral act, their crime, their sexuality. My shame that I had no brief to crush the sensibilities of a fellow human being. To criminalise private morality turns us off the steep path to civilisation. Now that's what he wrote to me, a London policeman who was responsible before the change in the homosexual law in that country for policing the bill that you want to oppose now. It seems to me that that is not what this House wants.
Braybrook.
I've listened carefully to my colleague and friend from Sydenham, but I want to tell him that I used to be a London policeman, and I walked the streets of London, and I have, in my time, arrested homosexuals who have molested young people. And I did it then, and I would do it again, because I think that homosexuality is a social evil that should not and must not be condoned by this country. I oppose the bill, Mr. Chairman, because it is not in the best interests of the homosexual persons or our society. What we are telling the nation of this people of this nation is that if it is legal, then people, and especially young, immature people, will think that it is socially and permissibly correct to be a homosexual. I do not accept that. I do not accept it there in my youth, and I do not accept it now. My colleague and friend also said that other nations have changed the law, and it's about time that we did too. He is quite correct when he says that other nations have changed the law. But I have correspondence here, which I am quite happy to table for the benefit of members of the House, which shows that some of those nations now bitterly regret that they have liberalised and changed the law. In the state of New York at the moment, where the disease of AIDS is running rampant through that state, where it is almost out of control, legislation is, this week I understand, being introduced to stop the spread of AIDS through homosexual contact. They want to close the gay bars, the gay churches, the gay dance halls, the gay restaurants, etc., because they have said, and in their legislation where they gave almost legal license to do what they want, including marrying one another, they have found that the society has rejected it, and they have got an appalling health problem. Mr. Chairman, in my constituent of Napier, since this bill was introduced oh so long ago, I have spoken to many of my constituents. I have spoken, they know my views. I have listened to theirs. Believe me, in the city of Napier, there are a few people who support the bill, but there are many, an overwhelming majority, who do not support the bill. And I shall vote against it accordingly, because I believe I am doing what my constituents expect me to do. Can I just briefly finish off talking about the armed forces, which was what I was speaking just before the interval. It doesn't matter if this Parliament makes it legal for soldiers, sailors and airmen to engage in homosexual activities. The members of the armed forces, and those of us who've served in the armed forces know this for a fact, will find that those members will find this practice repugnant. They will be disgusted by it. And any gay that thinks that they can carry out those practices legally in the armed forces will get a very short, sharp shift indeed. As I said before, it is already being spoken round Wairu. Well, I should have known there was an old sailor here who would instantly pick up that point. I suppose that my colleague's age will accept anything. Mr. Chairman, It is now becoming the butt of many jokes at Waiuru Camp, the largest military camp in New Zealand. As I said before, kiss me goodnight, Sergeant Major, will become reality instead of being illegal. Mr. Chairman, what this Parliament has forgotten, and what many of my own colleagues have forgotten, is that the actions of the so-called activists and the gay community are not the same values held by members of the armed forces or many, many people in our society. Even if the law does this, even if we pass it for the armed forces, as I said before, there will be many breaches of it, and I feel sorry for any gay that thinks he can go into the armed forces and practice their way there. Mr. Speaker, one of the things that's been ridiculed by the supporters of the bill time and time again has been that they have ridiculed the petition which was presented to this Parliament. I supported that petition. I was very proud to be associated with that petition. But one thing, though, that has struck me as rather strange is that though the people who opposed this bill organised a petition, and I'm not saying that it was 100% correct, because who knows, but I know that it was overwhelmingly correct as far as I was concerned, is that I'm surprised that the gay community themselves, if they are so certain of their case, they themselves have never organised a petition in support of this bill.
Fran Wild.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's important to correct a misapprehension under which the member for Napier is suffering, and that is regarding the New York situation. Yes, New York is a city with probably the largest AIDS problem in the world that we know of. And in fact, just this week in New York, they have passed anti-discrimination legislation along the same lines as the bill we're actually discussing at the moment. And the reason why they have done that is because they know that unless the gay population and the at-risk population are in fact able to live ordinary lives and not carry out sexual activities covertly, they will not be able to assist with a public education and a public health program. And the member for Napier might bear that in mind, that in fact the legislation was actually passed this week. Mr. Chairman, I want to comment on a question asked by the member for Waikare Moana, who appeared to have some difficulty with the age of consent. And he did ask me why 16 and why 18 and why 20. Well, I can't answer for the movers of the amendments why they've put in ages, why they have decided arbitrary ages such as 18 or 20 should be the age of consent, but I will tell him why there is an age of 16 in the bill. And it is quite simple. It is because the age of 16 already exists in the Crimes Act, and I'm sure I've told this to the House before. Perhaps the member wasn't listening at the time. The member for Whangarei says he's heard it all before, but perhaps he should listen too. He might learn something. There is, in fact, currently in the Crimes Act, an age of consent of 16, and the whole rationale behind this bill is to actually make the law non-discriminatory so that males and females are treated equally under it. And I think it's very important that those who are saying that it's going to legalise sodomy between 12-year-olds, etc., etc., and that has been said both in this House and out of it, and those who have said, as did the Salvation Army in the war cry of the 27th of April 1985, that the bill will effectively legalise sodomy with all males aged between 12 and 16, and it will be almost impossible to convict for sodomising even 12-year-old. People who make those claims are actually wrong, and they should read the bill, and they should read the current Crimes Act, Section 134, on which this bill is modelled. It's actually a gross distortion of the bill to say that, to make those claims, and it's simply designed to make people fearful of their children's safety if the bill is passed. In fact, the bill contains a provision which is already there in the Crimes Act under Section 134, and which has operated successfully for many years, and nobody, as far as I know, the police, the social welfare department or the social workers, churches, anyone who has had anything to do with this legislation has called for the repeal of this. That request has never been made. The provision which is there is commonly known as the carnal knowledge clause. Carnal knowledge is when a male has consenting sex with a girl aged between 12 and 15 years. It provides for two defences, and the member for Waikare Moana and Whangarei should listen to this because they might learn something. There are two defences possible to carnal knowledge. The first is if the male can prove he is younger than the girl. The second defence, which is here in this bill on an identical basis, has three elements, all of which must be proved to the court. Firstly, the accused must show he was under 21 at the time of the offence. Secondly, he must prove that he actually believed the girl or the other party was aged 16 years or older. And thirdly, the judge and the jury must all be satisfied that they could reasonably believe that the other party was 16 years or over. Mr. Chairman, these are very stringent criteria. They are very difficult to fulfil. It is not very often that they are even brought forward as a defence, because the people who are involved in the court proceedings know how difficult they are. And I think that it is quite fatuous to believe that it could be used successfully and that that it is going to prove the claims made by people who oppose the bill. The Homosexual Law Reform Bill simply picks up identically the provisions that are already there in the Crimes Act applying to heterosexual intercourse, and people who are opposing it on those grounds should examine their own attitudes towards the young females in our community. The people who use those arguments are either ignorant of or suppressing the facts about Section 134 of the Crimes Act, or, of course, Mr. Chairman,
Brandwine.
Or, of course, they are only endeavouring to sensationalise rather than inform, because they always use it in conjunction with discussion about anal intercourse, not about indecency or about heterosexual intercourse. And the other thing is, of course, that those who condemn this clause are actually saying that boys are so much more important than girls that they have to be given extra protection. Mr. Chairman, this clause is already in the law. This bill is simply bringing the law into line so that it treats males and females, heterosexual and homosexual, equally.
Mr. Trevor Young.
Mr. Chairman, I have given notice, I think circulated to this evening, an amendment I intend to move to the bill, which of course challenges the statements that have just been made by the member for Wellington Central, and I'll come on to that in a moment. You'll notice, sir, that with that amendment there are now 16 amendments on the floor to this bill, a bill which contains about three pages, a little over three pages, and from this arena, sir, there are 16 amendments expressing the differences that members of Parliament have to various parts of this bill. That emphasises to me, sir, the fact that really this Parliament is not in a position really to process this bill. I am still concerned, sir, that there was insufficient study done by the committee that was given this bill in the first place, and I'm not going to criticise that committee, sir. I know the pressure the committees are under. But I believe, sir, that before we do process this bill, we should have had a thorough investigation into all that is involved with it. And I think, sir, if that had been done, it would have been easier to find a common mind among the members of Parliament rather than the rush of, at least the host of amendments which are coming forth. And I believe, sir, that this is an important social piece of legislation which needs completely different treatment to the way in which Parliament is treating it. And in my mind, sir, we are really not in a position to process this bill in the way in which it should be dealt. Now, sir, I have moved an amendment tonight to omit Clause 3 from the bill. And in doing so, sir, that would reinstate, if this was carried by the House, it would mean that the Crimes Act, Section 140, would in effect be reinstated. That the Crimes Act at present, sir, handling this situation of indecency between man and boy, provides for a penalty of 10 years for any person who indecently assaults any boy under 16 years of age or does any indecent act and so on with a person under 16 years of age. The legislation before us now, the bill before us now, provides the 10-year penalty for exactly the same conditions, except that it is to apply not to a person of 16, but to a person of 12. Now, the member for Wellington Central has correctly pointed out that this is at variance with earlier sections in the Crimes Act relating to heterosexual practices. That is correct, and I accept that. But I want to say, sir, that we are not dealing tonight with the situation under this legislation of young girls. And I would suggest to the member for Wellington Central, and indeed to the House, if we are to look at this thing globally, then we should look at it in the context of amendments to the Crimes Act. And when we come down, as indeed I hope, sir, we will in due course, to look to the penalties under the Crimes Act and various other provisions under the Crimes Act, that is the time when we should make any alterations. You know, the member for Wellington Central just now said, well, we're going to bring, her intention is to bring it in line with indecent assaults on girls. All right, then why not lift the situation, the protection of girls, to that which is equal under Section 140 here for boys under 16, rather than reverse it the other way? Yes, sir, the answer is, well, we're dealing with homosexuals instead of heterosexuals under this bill, and that's not a sufficient answer for me at all. Now, sir, I think it is at our peril that we move to endorse the provisions of the bill at Clause 3 at the present time. I think we should remove it, and that there should be no approval by this House for any recognition of indecent assaults, indecent acts on any person or any boy under 16 years of age. We could reasonably leave it there, and we could look at this matter again, sir, when the Crimes Act, Mr. Chairman,
Trevor Young,
when the Crimes Act, sir, again comes up for review. I ask, sir, that be done by the House. I think that's the fair way to proceed, and the best way to proceed in handling this matter. As I said, sir, you could go either way. The member for Wellington Central says, she'd bring it in line, this clause in line with the indecency provisions on young girls by reducing the standards down to what is here in the Crimes Act to young girls. I'd rather see the move made the other way. And why, sir? Because, sir, associated with a lot of this sexual and carnal knowledge and things that are going on is violence in our community at the present time. I want to say, sir, and there's many members in this House are on a committee with me where women, young women, are coming to us concerned, really concerned, sir, about the conditions existing in our society at the present time, which is putting them at terrific risk of violence. And I believe, sir, that we are in a vastly different situation. Environment, with an environment that's affected by new age such as television and so on, where the video age, where there is violence proceeding sexually, mainly upon young girls, but not wholly that way. I believe, sir, that we need to have the law as strong as possible in this connection in the Crimes Act. And it's undesirable, so far as I'm concerned, to see us reduce these penalties and reduce the conditions to which these penalties provide in the way in which the member for Wellington Central, the promoter of this bill, is advocating it. I ask, sir, that the House give serious consideration in that way to the amendment that I have brought forward. Again, sir, I emphasise to the House, I don't think we are too late in saying no to the processing of the whole of this bill to allow the matter to be properly investigated by, if you like, a Royal Commission or whatever. But certainly, sir, there's been insufficient study given to this matter. That's why we've got so many amendments before the House at the present time, and I think that the House would be well advised if we did proceed on that line.
Perhaps just before calling the next member to speak, I could point out the members have a sheet of paper on which is contained the procedure proposed by the Speaker. But of course we'll accommodate it in due course.
Chairman.
The Honourable Russell Marshall.
Mr. Chairman, I first, in the first instance, want to address my remarks to the amendment moved by my colleague, the Minister of Defence, to Clause 7A, and I've circulated the paper to members about the effect of that because I asked the officers of the Education Department to comment on the second and third proposals which the Minister of Defence has proposed. But before I embark on my comments on those aspects, I simply want to say in passing that I do not agree with, nor do I intend to support the Minister of Defence's proposals. I think that I don't believe that that is necessary to take that step. I think there's been a considerable amount of exaggerated fear raised in this respect, as in many others, and I'm sure that although I've not been here for the whole of the debate, other members have canvassed adequately the reasons why no arrangement should be made for any occupational group. And I think I heard the member for Waikare Moana saying words to that effect over the radio earlier this evening. But, Mr. Chairman, I simply want to observe at this point that if the House decides to make the amendment which the Minister of Defence has proposed to clause 10, I want to point out the contents of my memorandum which suggests that there are quite serious implications if we go on to attempt to pass clauses 11 and 12, and the legal officers of the Education Department have suggested that we run the risk of being in a rather, I hesitate to use the words hypocritical, but certainly a double standard situation where people in other vocational training bodies would be required to adopt a different, would be allowed to adopt a different attitude towards people who are training for the armed forces than there would be for all other trainees. And that would be a very invidious position to put those organisations and their staff in, and it would open up a temptation which I think is quite unnecessary. Furthermore, Mr. Chairman, if, and I hope it doesn't eventuate, if Clause 10 is passed, then the legal advice given to me is that the concern of the Minister of Defence is more than adequately covered by Clause 10, without having to go on and pass Clauses 11 and 12, and Clause 12, frankly, the legal advice I have is quite superfluous. It's a belt and two sets of braces, which seems to me to be quite unnecessary, and I urge members, if they must pass the first two amendments of the Minister of Defence, do not pass Clause 11, and don't waste your time passing Clause 12 as well. But, Mr. Chairman, the other thing I want to say is that I have come to the view, not lightly or easily, because I suspect that I am a typical middle-aged Pākehā male who has many of the attitudes of my generation with me, but I have come to the conclusion that we must pass the law at 16. And, Mr. Chairman, there is no objective evidence anywhere produced in this House to suggest that sexual preferences are determined as late in life as that. Now, Mr. Chairman, I know there are a whole lot of other things. Well, Mr. Chairman, I must say I was ashamed as a member of this House to listen to the mindless emotional diatribe which we listened to last week from the member for Whangarei. Mr. Chairman, the member had his turn, he can get more turns. It is true that there will be, as there are now, people who will seek to corrupt minors. It is just as illegal under this legislation as it is now. And some of the outrageous emotional rubbish poured out by the member for Whangarei and others, I think he, at least as a member of this House, owes it to his constituents and to the people of this country to study what this bill is about, not what it's not about. There are many of the things which he ranted on about last week which are illegal now and which will be illegal if this bill is passed in its present form. And I think the House ought to concentrate on what's in the bill and what's proposed and not a whole lot of emotional claptrap. Now, Mr. Speaker, it is quite clear to me, and I haven't come to this point of view lightly, it is quite clear to me that individual sexual preference is determined long before people reach the age of 16. Nor am I convinced by those who would argue that it's possible to change a person's sexuality by whatever form after that age. Those preferences are set and long since determined by the time that people get to this point. And, Mr. Speaker, I urge people, therefore, to vote on the basis of what is objectively known and on, Mr. Chairman, and on it, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Braybrook.
Chairman, I've listened very carefully to the Minister of Education's contribution to this speech. And I want to correct him on one or two matters which I think he may not be aware of. And I do it with the best will in the world. He mentioned the fact that the armed forces are sometimes regarded and required to go to educational institutes. That is true. He said that it would be wrong for them to be treated differently from anybody else. Well, let me inform the Minister of Education that when one joins the armed forces, one accepts that you lose some of the liberties and the free and easy ways of civilian life, and you become subject to military law, or naval law, or Air Force law. For instance, when you go to a university or a technical institute as a soldier, you are still subject to military law. You have to shave every day. You have to have a haircut, and so on, because they are the requirements, amongst many others, of military law. Are we to suggest now that in some mysterious way that their human rights are being denied them because all of a sudden they can suddenly go and commit sodomy if they're attending a polytechnic? I'm afraid it is not true. When a New Zealander, male or female, joins the armed forces, they willingly give away many of the liberties which they are used to in civilian life and accept the disciplines of service life. Mr. Speaker, I've listened carefully to what some of the other members supporting this bill have said. I want to tell you that, in my opinion, this bill provides, if we take it right down, and I listened to the member for Eastern Hutt very carefully, and I agree with what he said, this bill provides a defence for homosexual acts upon boys under 12 where a homosexual under 21 can plead consent or mistake as to the age. I find that totally unacceptable. The legislation, in my view, would make it very difficult for guilt to be found in a court, for the simple reason that young person, be 12 or 13 or whatever, that young person and their parents would be loath to have that child exposed to the trauma of a court's cross-questioning. And I don't think that that is a good law, to put a young child through that. There's been much debate about the age. I don't care if it's 16, 18 or 20, because I think that 99 is not even an age, although I am tempted to think that by the time you reach 100, you should be permitted to do what you want. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, the present law is against anal intercourse, or what it is commonly known as sodomy. That is what the present law attempts to prevent. The changing of the law to discriminate homosexual acts, I don't believe, is the real aim of the gay community of New Zealand. I believe firmly that the real aim is to change society's attitudes towards homosexuality and gain total acceptance of homosexual behaviours in all areas. Overseas experience has shown that where legislators of various countries have heeded to them and given in and liberalised the law, what has happened? I'll explain, and many people have seen what has happened in the United States, especially Chicago and New York, in Amsterdam, in other parts of Holland and in London, etc. The first thing that is to happen is that the gay bars appear, bars for gays, gay dance halls, gay restaurants, and so on. The next piece of legislation undoubtedly to come in will be to allow gay men to marry, as they can in some states of the United States. That is the next logical step. Many of my colleagues will poo-hoo it, and it's not in the bill. But let me just tell you, the bill introduced by the previous National Party member a few years ago had the age at 21. I've read the Hansards. In those Hansards, members on this side of the House, I believe it was Henry May, said the next time this bill comes in, it'll be at the age of 16. And you know, he was right. And I'm telling you that if this bill becomes legal, within a few years, the next one will be that it's their sexual orientation, and males should be allowed to marry, and males should be allowed males should be allowed to adopt children. That is exactly the experience of what has happened overseas. It is the thin end of the wedge. It is the first step along the way. Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chairman, rather, I don't want to inflict that upon New Zealand, because nobody can give a guarantee what will happen if this bill is passed and what effect it will have on our society. We can only judge what has happened overseas.
Chairman,
The Honourable Van Young.
Mr. Chairman, I listened to the member for Napier with quite some interest, as I have the other members who have contributed to this debate. He mentioned the member of the opposition, myself, who introduced a bill 12 years ago. I want to say that as far as that measure was concerned, Mr. Chairman, it's quite different from the present measure, and I certainly would not support the provisions in the present measure. But I want to say very clearly this. When I was asked to introduce that bill 12 years ago, I said to the person who asked me, yes, I'm prepared to introduce a bill if I hear the arguments one way and another, and I am convinced that it is right that we should decriminalise homosexual acts between consenting adults in private. That's the view I took then, having heard all the arguments. And that's the view I hold today. And that is precisely the stance I will take today. This bill goes far further than that. Of all the amendments that we have before us, the one that comes the closest to the recommendations of that select committee of Parliament that sat over from one year to another, reported back to the House in 1975, is the amendment that is proposed by my colleague, the member for Fendleton. And I want to, insofar as the House will listen to my advice, advise the House to consider that amendment. I think it is the appropriate one. It is a complicated piece of legislation. We know very well that it is fraught, this piece of legislation is fraught with difficulty for the promoter. I'm not telling the member for Wellington Central anything she doesn't know. But I believe we should step forward, but step forward cautiously. We cannot get too far ahead of public opinion in matters to do with what they see as the morals of the country. Although, Mr. Speaker, we are talking about the criminal law, and we've got to ask ourselves, do we expect the criminal law to intervene where there is no victim? In other words, a victimless crime, where there are consenting adults in private, however their actions may offend us personally, offend our own morality, is that the place for the criminal law? And I say that it is not. It is not what takes place in public is. How minors may be affected are. And I'm not persuaded by the arguments put forward by the member for Wellington Central, who says that because we have a certain age of consent for heterosexual acts, the same age of consent should apply to homosexual acts. If you look through the jurisdictions of country after country overseas, that argument is not sustainable. So I say to the House, Mr. Speaker, to examine very closely, and I'm certainly going to support the amendment that's put forward by my colleague, the member for Fendleton, because I believe it meets the needs of those who seek reform of the legislation as it presently stands. It avoids offending those who are concerned at the impact of changes on the law, on one, society, and secondly, the young. Mr. Speaker, I believe that we should take a modest step forward in homosexual law reform. This bill, or this part, the part that we are considering now, goes far too far for this House, I believe, and for this country. But I suggest to the House, examine
the amendment from the member for Fendleton and support it.
A point of order, the Honourable Frank O'Flynn.
Mr. Chairman, I think I should seek your guidance by way of point of order. I listened with interest, though I was not in the chamber, to the speech a little while ago by the Minister of Education, who has an order paper, I think, but at any rate was making distributed some material, making comments on some of the contents of the order paper that stands in my name. Now, Mr. Chairman, those parts of that order paper all relate to part two of the bill. I have said nothing about them so far. I made a brief contribution in respect of that part of my order paper that deals with part one, and I'm now just a little bit at a loss. I'm sure the House doesn't want the Minister to give his speech again, and I'm sure it doesn't want me to give my speech twice. I am just inquiring, Mr. Chairman, whether, and members might like to take some interest in it, whether it would actually be more convenient if I said shortly what I want to say about that part of my order paper that deals with part two now rather than later.
The fact of the matter was that the member for Whanganui was talking to comments that he'd circulated, which included the amendment that the member for Island Bay proposes to part one. So, but he made his remarks all of a piece, or at least I understood that that's what he was doing. So it would be better, I think, those parts of the member for Whanganui's remarks that were irrelevant having been allowed, but in order for us not to stray into further irrelevancy, that the member for Island Bay restrain his comments until we come to part two. But if he presses the point, I think I would have to allow him the opportunity to comment now if he presses.
No, Mr. Chairman.
Bill Sutton.
Mr. Chairman, we are discussing part one of this bill, and it's clear that we are finally approaching the stage where we'll have some votes on matters of substance relating to this bill, and I hear applause from some of the members in the House at that prospect. If we consider what was said about part one of the bill in the report of the Department of Justice, they stated quite clearly that the key policy issue in the bill is the age of consent. They stated that it was their impression that there is a very strongly held conviction amongst large sections of the community that an age of consent of 16 years for homosexual relations is simply too young. There's a good deal of survey work to support that view, including the survey that I carried out in the Hawke's Bay electorate. When we consider the amendments that have been suggested by way of supplementary order paper and the speeches that were made in the second reading debate, it is clear that there are two largish camps amongst members. There are those centred around the member for Hauraki who take a strong opposing stance to the entire contents of this bill, and they have supported themselves in the debate. And there are those centred around the member for Wellington Central who are strongly in favour of all of the provisions in this bill. There are, in addition, a group of MPs that, at my numbering, from their speeches in this House come to 18, plus a few others who haven't chosen to speak in the debate, who have adopted a position of qualified support. They all support some aspects of proposed reform, but not the whole bill, and I am of that number. Mr. Chairman, there were, more precisely, 9 members who spoke who indicated that they were not happy with the age of consent of 16 for part one of this bill, but would consider some higher age, but not declaring themselves strongly for the highest age suggested, which has been age 20. And I address my arguments particularly to that smallish group, which may conceivably hold the balance in this voting. I argue that of the supplementary order papers and the amendments suggested, that the major ones are those that stand in the name of the member for Dunedin North, relating to an age, suggesting an age of 20 for the provisions in part one. I don't support that view because I've heard no convincing argument for the age of 20. It's not an age which is widely used to confirm an age for decision making in society. I believe that the lower age of 18 is now more commonly accepted as an appropriate age for maturity in regard, for example, to voting in parliamentary elections. Mr. Chairman, the member for North Shore has proposed that the age of 18 should apply to clauses 3, 4 and 5, that is, to various kinds of sexual activities involving males. That stance, I think, seeks to find that strand in public opinion which believes that the age of 16 is too young to allow consenting sexual acts between males, is prepared to accept a somewhat higher age. I don't support that stance either, because it seems to me to distinguish between males and females performing very similar sexual activities, rather than distinguishing between acts. And it's my view that the public, by and large, is concerned in particular about the act of sodomy or anal intercourse. That is, in fact, what most members have spoken to in this House when they've been opposing Part 1 of this bill. There's been virtually no consideration, at least in the Committee of the Whole, of the fact that this Act deals with a much wider range of sexual activities than simply sodomy or anal intercourse. I take the view, and I put that forward in Supplementary Order Paper number 72, which is, however, subsumed under the Supplementary Order Paper number 70 put forward by the member for North Shore. I suggested an amendment which would apply purely and simply to Clause 5. In other words, I would support Clauses 3 and 4 as they stand, because they appear to me to be consistent with the existing Crimes Act provisions relating to heterosexual activities. And because the activities, which are described as indecencies, are of a similar nature, whether they're carried out by female-female couples, or by male-female couples, or by male-male couples. They're of a similar nature. They are, in fact, commonly considered as exploratory sexual activities, and there's a good deal of evidence to show that they are mainly practiced by younger-aged people engaged in sexual exploration. Now, I believe that the law should recognise that such activities are of a similar nature, whether they involve only males or whether they involve males and females. When it comes, however, to anal intercourse, I think that that is widely accepted as being a dangerous practice, particularly with respect, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Ian McLean.
Mr. Chairman, debates of this kind seem to bring out the best and the worst in the House. Sometimes we get some of the best speeches that are ever heard here, and occasionally, as in this debate, we get some of the worst speeches. Part 1 of this bill, which was introduced by the member for Wellington Central, looks to have some clear political purposes, and she's looking for political merit in introducing the bill. The speeches in response by opponents have been extraordinary speeches, and there have been some people in the House who seem to have taken an unusual interest in certain rather less familiar sexual practices, and have got quite a few kicks from it. But this bill, Mr. Speaker, has been debated a long time, and this part has been debated a long time. I doubt if we've heard a new argument in the last 4 hours. There are some people who are moving amendments, and no doubt the House will want to hear them explaining what the amendments are. But I've been listening intently this evening, waiting to hear when some new argument may be advanced. And Mr. Chairman, there haven't been any this evening, and it looks as though most members of this House are at the stage where they've made their minds up, almost all of them, some of them a long time ago. And I suggest to you, Mr. Chairman, that's shown by the speaking list, by the number of people who in the committee have been able to take a second or third call, indicating that most members of the House have in fact made their minds up. Mr. Chairman, beg your pardon? The evidence I have for that is the speaking list, where the members have not been actively seeking the call, but have been willing to leave the proponents and the opponents of the bill to carry the whole debate, advancing the same old arguments ad nauseam, which... Well, it may well be that the member for Nelson has not made his mind up, and if he hasn't, no doubt the debate could continue for his benefit. Mr. Speaker, I believe that we're getting to the stage with this debate where we're holding back the committee and the House on... No, I'm not moving the closure. I'm not entitled to. I'm speaking to part one. I'm speaking to part one. That it is... There are other bills before the House. I'm not going to refer to them. But that it's time we got on with the business of the country, including other private members' bills. Mr. Speaker, I would seldom ever, if ever, urge a Speaker or a Chairman of Committees ever to move the closure. But I would suggest to you that on this particular occasion, you should assess whether any new arguments are being advanced, whether the committee has made its minds up, and that after those who are moving amendments have been able to explain them, that the House should then decide to go and vote on this bill. Mr. Speaker, there's only one proviso I'd add, and that is providing the government would give an assurance that on any closure motion, the whip would not apply.
The Honourable Fitzgerald Cartney Sullivan.
Sheets of amendments to this bill are fluttering on our desks like confetti. Nine, as at a week ago when we last debated this bill, and 18 by tonight. And what does that prove? We have never had another bill in this House, in my experience, that has had so many amendments put by such a wide variety of members in this House. Clearly, they are dissatisfied and unhappy about the principal bill. And I make that case as evidence of that unease. Mr. Chairman, supporters of this bill claim that 10% of our population are homosexual. Taking the 1981 census, that would mean that there are about 317,000 homosexual New Zealanders. It is therefore suggested that this bill is for these 317,000 individuals in this country. If this bill is passed, any New Zealander aged 16 years and over could indulge in any aspect of homosexual behaviour with any other New Zealander aged 16 years and over, and also with any other person from any other part of the world aged 16 years and over, providing both partners consent and that their homosexual behaviour is in private and within this country. What a rare distinction for this little nation, that it will provide, if this bill passes, that legal protection. If this bill is passed, it would provide a blanket provision concealing such homosexual behaviour from criminal sanctions. Any person visiting New Zealand would also be covered by the law while in New Zealand. I have referred in earlier debates on this bill to an affluent international jet-setting group with their own travel agencies who already have special visits to this country, providing this bill passes on their agenda. I speak in particular of American travel agents for homosexuals, poised to come to this Mecca of the Pacific where they can indulge in whatever they wish to in homosexual behaviour with complete equanimity, knowing the law in New Zealand will set the seal of approval. There is the promise of new territory and of an unspoiled Polynesian land. I come back to another observation I made during my inquiries in San Francisco last year, where the young homosexual prostitutes in that city were from the ethnic minorities. And I learnt of the phrase, young and black is beautiful, but brown is better, in respect to this specific activity and with respect to prostitutes, homosexual, young homosexual prostitutes. So this bill is not actually limited only to the 317,000 New Zealand homosexuals. The way is opened for the international homosexual tourists. Young New Zealand boys would be more interesting to such tourists than older men. And if the pattern recorded in America is replicated, and I must say, Mr. Chairman, that it has been in an extraordinary number of aspects replicated here in New Zealand, but a few years later than the program in America, then young Polynesian boys would be especially choice. Any thorough research on the subject will also reveal the validity, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Doug Kidd.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the question be now put.
Point of order, Speaker.
Point of order, Mr. Lee.
Chairman, I ask you to consider the precipitous nature of that motion.
I think, to say that there are a number of speakers... Well, I think, is the member... If I can just explain the situation, the member for Marlborough called and moved that the motion be put. That's not debatable. But I'm not prepared to accept it at this stage.
The point of order I was raising, Mr. Speaker.
Yeah, but I thought the member was talking to the closure, which, of course, is not... is not a question before the House.
Mr. Banks,
thank you for the call. 835,000 New Zealanders, average decent people, presented this Parliament with a petition saying they don't want to know about this bill. They don't want to legalise sodomy for 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds, 18-year-olds or 20-year-olds. They don't want to have sodomy legalised for armed servicemen. They don't want to have sodomy legalised for any sector of our society because they say that legalising sodomy is the thin edge of the wedge and it's going to destabilise the family unit, destroy this nation and democracy. So I stand here again tonight taking my fourth call and not apologising and saying this bill is evil. And while Rome burns, we are back here in the House tonight trying to decide whether boys should be able to sodomise each other at 14, 15, 16 or some other age. And what a disgraceful speech, Mr. Speaker, we heard from the member for Whanganui, the former Minister of Religion, now the Minister of Education, who supports 14, 15, 16-year-old schoolboys being able to sodomise each other if they wish and where they wish. What a disgraceful situation. We have the Minister of Defence who's going to support this bill, legalising sodomy for 16-year-old boys, and he has the temerity, the cheek, to bring in an amendment saying that the armed services should be exempt. What we say on this side of the House is if it's good enough to exempt the armed services, in the name of the Lord, it's good enough to exempt everyone. We don't want any sodomy in our society. We think it's evil, and we think it's evil that this Parliament, sponsored by the Labour Party member for Wellington Central, should have this evil bill here in this House. Mr. Chairman, what keeps me going is people that come to this Parliament every Wednesday night. Some of them stand down on these steps, some of them are kneeling on the steps, some of them are praying, and the members and the telegrams of support that me and my friends, the member for Napier, the member for Invercargill, Papakura and Hauraki, we get messages of support every Wednesday saying, keep up the fight, you've got to stop this bill, you've got to do your best, and that's what we're doing. And the youth with a mission here tonight in Parliament, youth with a mission out there praying that common sense will prevail and this Parliament will say no to every provision of this bill. That's what I'm saying, no to every provision of this bill. The vast majority of the population, 98% of the population are not interested in homosexual activity, don't indulge in it, and don't want this bill. We are pandering to 2% of the population that are perverted. And as far as I'm concerned, the suggestion that we import a few camels for these people might be the answer instead of wasting Parliament's time. Mr. Chairman, this is a disgraceful bill. It's the thin edge of the wedge. Next we'll probably have from a Labour Party member a bill legalising euthanasia, or a bill legalising sexual activity with animals, or next year we'll probably see from the member for Wellington Central amendment lowering the age to 14 or 13 or 12. We on this side of the House who oppose this bill say it is evil. The member for Wellington Central knows it's evil. She's only doing it for some sort of cheap political gain to try and resurrect her electoral majority. She knows it's bad. 835,000 New Zealanders have said it's bad. My people in Whangarei say it's bad. And every week they send me down here with a message to tell this Parliament it's bad. Mr. Chairman, I hope common sense will prevail. And as I said, I finish as I started. While Rome burns, while this country is in economic crisis, this country is defenceless, Mr. Chairman, and here we are discussing this nonsense of whether 16-year-old boys are old enough to sodomise each other, or whether it should be higher, or whether it should be lower. We, the opponents of this bill, say it's not needed, not wanted, and quite evil. Mr. Chairman, I thank you very much for the opportunity to speak for the fourth time. We make no apologies, the opponents of this bill, because we're going to speak again and again on this bill, because we think it is thoroughly bad. We heard a shameful speech from the former Minister of Religion, the Minister of Education, and who is supposed to be out there looking after the interests of young boys and young girls in schools, and here he is in the House supporting legalisation of sodomy.
Dr. Cullen.
Mr. Chairman, I don't intend to respond in the same style to the member for Whangarei as his speech, merely to suggest to him, as I've suggested before, that this is a matter which should be regarded with some degree of rationality rather than simply bigotry and prejudice. And I say that, sir, because I don't think in approaching this part of this bill, it is appropriate for members to base their voting, their approach to legislation, on a series of prejudices rather than on the legislation in front of them. I'm quite sure that the great majority of the members of this House share those prejudices which they have had imbued within them through a long process of acculturation and education. But that is irrelevant. That is irrelevant to the state of the law. And the question before the House on this part is really very simple. The question is whether people who commit anal intercourse, whether indeed heterosexual or homosexual anal intercourse, should be subject to criminal penalties if they are of sufficient age to have made up their minds about that, and whether they have given consent to that act taking place. And indeed we've had problems, sir, in that members, like people in the public at large, have consistently misrepresented parts of this bill. To take one simple example, the member for Hauraki state of this bill legalises male brothels because it repeals Section 146 of the Crimes Act. He forgot to note that it also amends Section 147 on brothel keeping to change the word woman to person. And he may be so overwhelmed by the mass of feminist literature that he is not aware that men are still people in this society. And therefore, sir, if brothels are banned for people, they are banned for both men and women. And the bill bans brothels for men as it does for women. And if only some members would bother to read the bill, bother to get some proper advice, they would not make some of the stupid statements in this House that they have done. But I come back to the essential matter. What is the purpose? What is the purpose in subjecting people who are homosexual to the threat of criminal incarceration for their activities? Is it going to stop people being homosexual? Is it going to stop people committing homosexual acts?
is it going to contribute in one small part or another to the moral or the mental or the physical health of this community? And the answer to that is so clearly no that it is very hard to understand how people who adopt a rational attitude can oppose this part of the bill. I ignore part two because there are separate issues there, even though I support part two. The real issue, therefore, is what the age of consent should be. And that is a difficult issue, because any age of consent is arbitrary. Any age of consent does not apply to every individual in equal circumstances. Some people are indeed mature, both physically and mentally, at 16. Others are not. Others are mature before 16. As my daughters get older, and I've had people ask me whether I'm worried about my children if this bill passes, and since my children are both daughters, I have no worries at all. I'm much more worried about some of the mad heterosexuals out there in the community as my daughters get older. I begin to think that 16 is too young for heterosexual consent. But that is not the issue. The issue is that we have to arrive at an age which anybody who is rational admits is arbitrary, because it cannot apply to each individual equally. And therefore, why should the age for homosexual consent be different from the age for heterosexual consent? Apart from the legal problems that that creates, because anal intercourse is not a solely homosexual act, as the member for Papakura should know, it is not a solely homosexual act, it creates difficulties because one simply cannot say that young men or boys, I do not care what you call them, are necessarily less mature than young women or girls at the age of 16. And that is the issue in front of the House.
Mr. Lee.
Chairman, thank you. The last speaker, commitment to liberalism is well established in his house. He first of all said that in the establishment of brothels that I was allegedly to have spoken about, he was first of all totally incorrect. I said to the House in the earlier stage of this debate that in fact young people down in fact below the age of 16 in actual fact could be prostitutes, boy prostitutes, and they did not need to, in fact, to have a place of prostitution or a brothel. They could, in fact, by being sodomized and therefore being prostitutes, the being the person sodomized, they can, in fact, become prostitutes by virtue of the law change. That's the important point. They can even solicit, in actual fact. They can even solicit under the new law, where at the present time, of course, that's an offence under the current law. They cannot keep a brothel. That's recognised. He misinterpreted that. He's also well astray with the second point when he talks about those being incarcerated. Sir, this House has heard repeatedly that there has not been one homosexual incarcerated over 14 years for consent in private by the police. And we get this same steer from the members of the government, sir, who are completely trying to confound what we are about. Now, I want to repeat also comments about the law that was effected today in the New York State to do with sexual orientation. I believe the move of the bill made first comment about this. What I want to inform the House, sir, is this, that whilst that law was accepted, Roman Catholic Archbishop of New York, Cardinal John O'Connor, has said this today also, that he will fight the new law by every legal means not to accept it. He said if he has no redress through those measures, he will close down the Catholic hospitals and schools in the state of New York. For them, he says, to operate under this law, they would not be Catholic. Sir, that is response of the Archbishop in New York State today in response to that law becoming effective. Now, sir, that's the measure of the people response in that state, and I put to you, is that the sort of thing that New Zealanders have to also undertake to somehow bring back sanity to the population of this country after these issues have taken place? There's another small side here in that the law changed today. It said that where more than four families are in one group of buildings, one of the additional accommodation units must then be rented to homosexuals. Sir, I just asked the House to ponder the enormity of that particular appendage to the law change today in New York. And sir, that is ostensibly based on the victorious argument that homosexuals will be able to come out, declare their situations, and get treatment. Now, sir, that argument is totally fallacious. It assumes, in fact, that these people are not going to come out whilst that law exists. And in that state particularly, there is already a form of decriminalisation. Sir, we indeed know what is going to happen. There will be those who will come forward seeking medical assistance because there will be an increase in AIDS sufferers and homosexuals resulting from the degree of liberalism that the law will introduce. It runs hand in mouth together. Now, sir, there's an interesting little side in the Crimes Act that I asked the government whip to ponder. In Crimes Act Section 201, it says that there is a penalty of 14 years for anybody who willfully or knowingly infects another with a disease. And I ask him, and I ask the mover of the bill indeed, is it their intention now, because they're so ready to quote other sections of the Crimes Act, are they, in the light of that knowledge, anybody who willingly or knowingly infects another, which covers a homosexual situation in its entirety, those people then are subject to a 14-year imprisonment.